The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompox, Colombia. Yes, I'm in the tropics this week. I'm not in Bogota. I will be soon enough back in Bogota. But for this episode 146, we'll be on the line to someone who's an authority in tourism about Colombia, tourism in general, and we'll be on the phone from here, Mompox, to Managua, Nicaragua. But let me just describe what I can see in front of me now. I'm looking over the courtyard, the internal garden at my house, the Casa Amaria Hotel in Mompox, bougainvilleas in flower in that central patio, tropical birds in song overhead, and indeed butterflies flitting from branch to branch. So why aren't you here? That's the question you should be asking yourselves. Come on down to Mompox, come on down to Colombia, because we're talking tourism today, tourism in Colombia, and how it will be affected and how it will benefit from the peace accords to be signed with the FARC guerrillas. And of course, we must remember that it's the FARC that are signing the peace accords, or are in line to sign, but mostly has been signed in Cuba. But there will be a signing for show in, I guess, in Bogota in this month, later on in July, the location of which is said to be the National University. But we'll see how that pans out. Anyway, without that, you know, we'll be talking about tourism with Alex Edgerton. He's the author of The Lonely Planet, one of the authors of The Lonely Planet Guide to Colombia and various other guides around the world, but an expert, an authority on tourism. In terms of magazines and publications, I'm still promoting, I'm still out there hammering away for my Colombia Calling magazine on Indiegogo. We're at 10% of funds needed. There's a couple of weeks left. I genuinely believe that with all of your help, all 8,000 of you plus who download this show, we can make this happen. We can make Colombia Calling magazine an annual edition, a special collector's item with proper in-depth long-form reporting about Colombia. So please sign on to Indiegogo.com, look for Colombia Calling, and you'll find the link on our Facebook pages and all over the web, because I've been quite over the top trying to promote it. It's been hard going, but 10% means that people are out there. I just need to find just a few more and a few more donations, and we can get this off the ground. I've had emails from all over the world. I've had emails from people now living in Bucaramanga, Canadians living where my family live up there in Canada, who are coming down to Colombia to visit. And so if you are coming down, if you are thinking of coming down, tune into our show. Read our website, but also look at the website Columbia4U.com. That's Columbia4U.com. And if you like the look of any of their tours that they've got around Colombia, put in the code ColumbiaCallingForYou, just like the website, really. ColumbiaCallingForYou, and that will promote and give you a discount for any of the tours there, because we've set up an alliance with them. But without that, you know, equally, still come to Colombia. Come on down, because really, you know, for the first time, it seems that Colombia is getting good international press. Yes, there's plenty of issues that need to be dealt with in a post-accord situation. But, I mean, you know, this is more than 64 years of one side of the conflict, hopefully coming to an end this month. I mean, how immense is that? There are issues. Yes, of course, there are issues. There is everything needs to be done in Colombia. But, you know, I mean, we'll be talking about this with Alex Edgerton in the coming segments of this show. I mean, who better to talk about it than the author, one of the authors of the Lonely Planet Guidebook to Columbia. So without further ado, I'm going to take a short break. Check out our websites. That's columbiacallingradio.com. We're on Twitter, columbiacalling.com, at Columbia Calling, and we're on Facebook as well. And see, yes, please reach into your pockets and perhaps give us a little bit of a donation to make the Columbia Calling magazine on Indiegogo a reality, please. So I'm going to sign off and we'll be back with Alex Edgerton on the line from Managua. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're making history today because this might be the first ever phone call over the line from Mompos, Colombia. That's Mompos. I've got my little place 6 hours inland from Cartagena along the Magdalena River to, well, can you guess? Up to Managua in Nicaragua. Exotic phone calls today. We're talking to Alex Edgerton, who's one of the authors of The Lonely Planet, Columbia. He's on the line in Managua. We've had him on the show before, but this is him back on episode 146 to talk to us a little bit about, well, the idea is to talk about, you know, what could this peace agreement with the FARC guerrillas mean for tourism in the country, so in Colombia. So, Alex, welcome back on Columbia Calling.
Thanks, Richard. Good to be here.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to have you back, and someone so, you know, let's say you are an expert in the travel industry. You are a travel writer. You've written many, you know, contributed to many Lonely Planet books. You live most of the year in Colombia, so you're in a perfect position to give us some, you know, feedback on your thoughts on these momentous, you know, agreements that have been written up in Havana and will be signed soon enough. Here, the final signing will be here in Colombia. But let's just talk a little bit. You're on the line from Nicaragua. You know, Nicaragua, an interesting country. But what projects have you got in the pipeline coming up for Lonely Planet?
Well, actually, now, Richard, it's pretty much a quiet period. In a few months, I'll be heading off to the Caribbean, so hopefully, to work in St. Vincent and in Barbados and St. Lucia. So that's kind of one of the best regions, I suppose, to work in the eyes of the people, because they imagine you're sitting on, you know, crystalline beaches. But in reality, we just keep moving around and don't get much time to enjoy it. But still, it's a nice place to work. So that's what's coming up. But right now, yeah, between those jobs and doing a bit of other work on the side, so taking the chance to, you know, dip into some other projects.
Yes, but in one small comment, you've made every aspiring travel writer, you know, tremble with joy at the possibility of going up and researching those Caribbean islands. Yes, of course, we all think you're going to be sitting on crystalline, you know, white sandy beaches, but of course the reality is far different. It's three or four restaurants or hostels visited before breakfast, and then a very quick breakfast somewhere with a write-up, and then however many places that you have to research then later in the day. So, I mean, it's a tough job, that, and of course these are the most widely selling guidebooks out there, so you know, you've got to take it seriously. It's not just a jolly on the beach.
Sure, it's I've been to destinations. I was working in Belize, and I think I was in Belize 6 weeks, and I didn't get in the water once. You know, you're just running up and down, checking under toilet seats, under beds, checking out fast timetables, so that when people arrive on the vacation, and don't have nasty surprises, you know, so they can guarantee the quality of the place they're going. So yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, but it's a great job, so you can't really complain too much.
Okay, awesome. Now, for those of you out there like me who own establishments, remember that. You heard it here first. They do check under the toilet seats. So anyway, you've got, we want to talk about Colombia. And, this peace accord, because we're going to go into a post-accord situation. This peace accord is going to be signed this month here in Colombia in July. And, well, the national press, let's just say El Tiempo, El Espectador, and the others are bringing up and writing all about the destinations in Colombia that will then open up to the to tourists and so on. And I just want to look at this one article and sort of discuss it with you for a little bit. And they've got this idea. It's this special that was in El Tiempo last week. In fact, they ran it a year ago anyway, but they ran it again, which is their want. But they sort of say that Putumayo, the Chocó, Guainía, Urabá, Darien, Valpez, Magdalena, Meta, and the Norte de Santander, those eight departments will benefit the most from tourism when, let's say, the conflict has ended. And I just wanted to jump in there and say, I've been to most of the Chocó, I've been to most of Magdalena department, I've been to a lot of Urabá, Darien, well, not Darien so much. I've been to the place that they are, suggesting in Meta, which is Caño Cristales, and the Norte Santander, they're writing about Playa de Belén, and of course Los Esturaques. But I just think that they're not well. While this article is very positive, there's a lot to be said still about these areas in terms of tourism, and you would be the person to be able to sort of best explain that to our listeners, I think.
Yeah, sure, Richard. Look, before we begin, obviously any peace deal with a organization as big as the FARC, which has been going on so long in the war, is great news. There's no doubt about it. It's great news. It will only be positive. But the extent to which it will benefit in the immediate term tourism is up for debate, because this is a deal with the FARC. It's not a total peace in Colombia. As you know, there's a lot of armed groups in Colombia. There's a lot of disorder in far-flung parts of the country. And so, look, it's more than anything, in the immediate term, it's a propaganda coup. In the immediate term, it allows the government to paint a picture. You know, the FARC has been the most high-profile group, and it's the longest-running war in the continent. And, you know, obviously from a media point of view and from a publication's point of view, they can go out and say, look, the war is over. But the reality on the ground, as you well know, is far from that. Where you will see benefits are in the places that the FARC has direct control alone. And whether those benefits will remain to be seen, because when they disappear, other groups could move into those vacuums. But a lot of those places you mentioned, the problems of security aren't from the FARC. For example, they could be from armed groups, from narcotics groups, from what they call bandas criminales in Colombia, which is criminal gangs. For example, in the north of Santander, it's the hotbed for the ELN, which are entering preparatory peace talks with the government, but they're not going as fast or as far as these talks have gone. Other places I mentioned, Urabá, Chocó, there's a lot of armed groups present in those places. So, you know, it's not a total peace that from one day or the other the whole country will be safe. It's a step, it's a major step, and it's a very important step, but I think it would be foolish to assume that with signing these accords, all of those destinations that you mentioned will become the next tourism hotspots.
Yeah, and I think you're completely right on that, and we need to reiterate and say, it's rather than take the wind out of Colombia's sails, and rather than, rain on their parade. I mean, this is an immense step forward for Colombia. There are all sorts of problems. There are all sorts of problems in a post-accord situation, and of course with all the other different militant groups here, let's say, or drug trafficking groups, or what they're called now. They're called the GAO, so the Grupos Armados Organizados. That's the latest name for these groups, these criminal gangs. There are all sorts of problems all through Colombia, but, you know, this is a huge, huge step forward. I mean, that's what you're saying as well. I mean, we do have to celebrate this, but when you look at some of the parts of Colombia and you say, and that point you make, it's awesome. It's so clear that, where the FARC was the only, let's say, authority controlling the areas, those areas are set to benefit. And yes, like the Norte Santander is primarily ELN now. I mean, if not all ELN, and of course there's a little bit of the EPL, but that's really the Popular Liberation Army is really an armed gang at the moment. And the Chocó has any number of groups, and I worry about any article that then writes about the let's say opening up the Darien area, because regardless of guerrilla groups, I mean it's an area for banditry, isn't it? I mean it's an area. You've spent quite a lot of time in Urabá, I believe, and you just worry about these sort of let's say premature articles. I mean, as you say, propaganda, sure. But premature.
Sure. Look, Richard, I mean, I understand the government should be promoting the destination end of the world on a generic level. But yeah, this talking about specific areas, let's talk about Ulaba. You know, Ulaba is a region that the FARC hasn't been present in the vast majority of Ulaba for a long time. They've been displaced there by armed groups. They're still up in the mountains, but like the main areas where tourists would want to go, which is along the Caribbean Sea, around, you know, the Gulf of Ulaba and all that, the FARC haven't been there for a long, long time. So this accord in those areas will have absolutely no effect whatsoever.
Yeah.
Where it's an issue of, you know, identifying if the government wants to promote new areas, then we need to look at places like Cauca, like the Amazon Basin, where the FARC has traditionally been very strong. And then the government needs to put a lot of resources in those places to maintain the security once the FARC pull out, because with a power vacuum, as we said, anybody can move in. But places like, for example, one destination I think will benefit would be Caño Cristales, because the area surrounding Caño Cristales has always been a hotbed of guerrilla activity. And with this peace accord, there's the potential to open up the overland route into Caño Cristales. Traditionally, people have flown in from Bogotá, or from Villa Vicencio, and have taken a plane right to Caño Cristales. Now, with these peace accords, it's possible that whole area could open up and people could make overland trips. Whether that's a positive thing for the ecology of the area is another issue. But in reality, it's something that you know, these areas, Cauca is another area where I'm based when I'm in Colombia. Cauca is an area which traditionally has had a very strong presence of the FARC. And with these accords, it's possible that a lot of these areas from around Silvia, around Bella Casa, these beautiful mountain areas that have always been off limits, could become, you know, new tourist attractions. That's very much true. Colombia is a very, very diverse country with very diverse regions. And, you know, it's a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that, the case-by-case basis. And yes, the Caño Cristales in Meta. I think I receive emails or messages on a daily basis from listeners or readers of my blog or articles I've written about Caño Cristales asking for details about it, because it is spectacular. And those of you in the UK who follow the press will know that over a year ago, it was Prince Charles who came down to visit Caño Cristales. I mean, can you imagine royalty visiting what was previously a guerrilla stronghold? It really was the Casa Verde. It was their principal base, or one of them, during exactly 1998 and 2002, which was the demilitarized zone, which was given over by then President Andrés Pastrana, in which to conduct failed peace talks. But it was an area of the country given over to the FARC, which was bigger than Switzerland. So that just gives you an idea of the size of things here in Colombia. But as you say, it's a place by place individual list that we can say where things will increase touristically and how things will improve. And I think, yes, obviously places like Cauca, where you are based. And I think obviously, as you say, when we talk about propaganda, I mean, Colombia will benefit as a whole just for good press. Finally, good press saying, and they'll sell it as peace in Colombia while it's not peace in Colombia. But equally, it's a massive, massive step forward. And I for one expect that next year, economic situations, global economic situations notwithstanding, Colombia will see more tourism. But as we wind down this first section here, this first section with you, Alex, I mean, since you've been coming to Colombia, which I cannot remember the date of it, but we have seen a massive increase in foreign tourists.
Absolutely, Richard. Look, the first time I visited Colombia was in 98, and back then, there was nobody. In Cartagena, there was a couple of hostels, two or three hostels, and that was it. There was, no tourists at all, no established tourist trail. Everybody was jumping from South America, from Venezuela. Imagine people go from Venezuela to Panama to skip Colombia. And look, it's grown exponentially, and this will only help that even further. I mean, if we have to be honest, the FARC is the group that everybody outside Colombia knows. It's the group, the boogeyman, it's been going on forever. People still have images of, people being kidnapped by the FARC. We should also make it clear that, we've mentioned that the FARC aren't all over Colombia, and also in recent times, the FARC have really not been targeting tourists. There was a time when they were. But in recent times, they made a pledge even before these final accords, they made a pledge a while back to stop kidnapping, and for the most part have honored that. So, I mean, even if tourists in recent times have strolled into FARC areas, it hasn't necessarily been the grave situation that it has been in the past. I mean, the accord is obviously a very visual, obvious point to the end of the conflict, but this has been coming a long time, which is why we saw on the ground in the immediate effect, it will be a massive difference, because really there haven't been, I haven't heard any tourists having that many problems. There's been a couple of unfortunate incidents in the Choco and in a couple of other areas, but on a main level, they haven't been the bogeyman that they once were. Whether that's from their weakened position or from a desire for peace, whether this has been laid out from a long time or from new leadership, I can't say. But yeah, I mean, the FARC definitely, it's the big thing that was hanging over tourism in Colombia. So from a point of view of attracting more tourists to the country, absolutely, it's huge news.
That's excellent. And finishing that section on a very positive note, we're talking to Alex Edgerton, one of the authors of The Lonely Planet Guide to Colombia and various other guides around the world. We'll be right back after a short break, and we'll continue to talk about tourism in Colombia in a post-accord or in a peace situation with Alex. So don't go away. This is Colombia Calling, episode 146, and I'm Richard McCall. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. This is episode 146, and we're on the line from Mompox, Colombia, to Managua, Nicaragua. So we're making history in that. This might be the first ever phone call. It's certainly the first ever recording done from Mompox to Managua. I'm not being pretentious about that. I really just don't think it's ever happened before. So as we said before, Alex Edgerton is a Lonely Planet author. He has written and contributed to various Colombia guides and, of course, other guides. He will be jetting off to other areas to write about the Caribbean and making people jealous of his lifestyle, jetting from island to island. But it's not all about that, you know, and as he said in that first section there, it's not, you know, the life of a travel writer is actually quite tough if you're going to make it. But let's talk more seriously about what this peace with the FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, those guerrillas, what this means for tourism in Colombia. And we've been talking about the sort of places that are going to benefit, and we'll talk further about that later. But I want to talk economics, Alex. And you know, I've been reading online, and of course, Adrian Anselma from Colombia Reports has been reporting on it quite extensively, and he's got an article on his front page there saying, you know, a direct quote from President Santos at some meeting or another the other week was saying, peace in Colombia will increase the country's GDP by 1% a year. Normally, President Santos is incredibly effusive and exaggerates those things. I would have expected him to say something like 6% of the GDP, but he's saying 1%. I mean, I imagine he's saying that because of the what's going on in the global economy at the moment, Brexit and so on. But, I mean, 1% is still significant, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the way Colombia has been growing, though, it has been, you know, tourism has been growing absolutely exponentially in the last little period. Obviously, peace will be a major factor in increasing that rate of growth. However, I think the peace process is going to appeal to a particular group of tourists, which will be more your package tourists, your more wealthy tourists, because, to be honest, backpackers don't seem to be afraid of much. They've been coming to Colombia en masse. Word's got out amongst independent travellers, and that horse has bolted. They're here. There's no stopping that now. They've seen what a great country it is, what it has to offer. They've seen that it's safe, that, you know, it's not the big bad Colombia that we all know about. So I think it's in a particular group, and those are a high yield group. Package tourists who come, you know, 15, 20 tourists in a group, you know, hundreds of those groups coming through every month. That's for the government, that's good news. Cruise ships, they can expect, even though the places where the cruise ships stop are not necessarily the places that have been affected by the war, the whole Colombia being safe, Colombia being, you know, a new exciting, safe destination, which they're going to be obviously promoting very hardly, if that's going to be a big boom for those groups, that kind of tourism, that mass tourism, the government, let's be honest, has been chasing quite hard. is going to be very, very beneficial. Whether that has a direct positive impact on the economy with regards to your average person in Colombia is another issue, because whether that tourism is the most positive kind of tourism for the country is up for debate. But definitely it will increase, whether the numbers that President Santos is providing prove accurate or not, there's no doubt that it will have a massive effect.
Yeah, definitely that. And you know what? Even we lambast the cruise ships from time to time because they, you know, it's dense, heavyweight tourism on certain places. But there are still people out there, let's say, maybe from Europe or the United States, North America, who won't go on those cruise ships that stop in Colombia because of the fear that they're going to get kidnapped off the gangplank. You know, it's like, so, I mean, this will change it. Even if it's, you know, a small percentage increase on cruise ships, it will change that side of things. People will say, well, no, listen, I just saw that headline that Colombia's in peace. I just saw we can go there without any fear. And you know, it's just a massive thing that can happen. Can it pick up the slack, you know, let's say in the collapse of oil prices? In truth, I doubt it. I think Colombia probably needs to diversify its economy more, but that's, you know, a long-term issue which won't inevitably affect the politics of President Santos, because of course the politics is short term, you know, for the 4-year tenure, and then he'll be out of there because he's done two terms, you know, one term after another. So we'll see how it goes. And I want to mention something. You said, I read in the Economist the other day how low President Santos' approval rating is, and I just thought, you know, I'd run that by you. Was it about 27 or 21% his approval rating at the moment? This is a man who's been pushing for peace. Do you have any thoughts on this, Alex?
Look, he's been down in the doldrums, Richard, for quite some time now. He has, to be honest, absolutely shocking approval ratings. I think he's now resigned to that and pushing more for his legacy as the president who brought peace. I don't think he's paying too much attention for President Santos. If he's the guy that signs the deal, he'll go down the history. And I think that's what he's focused on. I don't think he's too bothered about those approval ratings. What I think he would be concerned about is the potential for a referendum on peace and making sure that gets pushed through. It looks, I mean, right now, the vast majority, over 60%, I saw in a recent survey, of Colombians are in favor of the peace deal. But, you know, once the propaganda comes out, once those people who have a vested interest in the military and the militarization of the country start their propaganda, you never know. I mean, we have to mention that this peace deal supposedly will be put to the public. And vote, we don't know if it's binding or not, but I mean, this is definitely not inked and done yet. So I think for President Santos, his focus right now is on getting that through. And part of that is promoting all the benefits that peace will bring to Colombia. I've seen also the government has mentioned that if there's no peace, if war continues, mentioned that, you know, taxes will have to go up. And, you know, it's kind of a carrot and a stick approach to get people behind the process. I think while we're mentioning the effect on the economy, I think the areas of the tourist industry that will benefit immediately and in the most significant way are actually the places that are already established, that are already far from the war, because those places are going to receive a new influx of tourists, like you said. People who just look at the headlines, people, when they're sitting at their breakfast table in Europe or in North America, they're not looking at regions, departments, where the guerrillas are present, where they're not present, they're looking at the country as a whole. Yep. And so those people who have never been to Colombia, they're more likely to come, but they're going to go to the main attractions. They're going to go to Cartagena, to Medellin, to the coffee zone, to Bogota, to the San Andres, because it's their first trip. The kind of people who are being put off by war, when they come the first time, they're not going to go gallivanting off into the mountains, into the areas where the FARC used to be strong. They're going to go check out the highlights of the country. So those very regions that are already developed and already making a decent shot at tourism are the ones that are going to benefit in the very short term.
Yeah, I think that's right. And of course, and if it can be channeled in the right way, you know, maybe I'm being very naive in this, you know, in a sustainable fashion that promotes the local economy in all of these places, then we're onto a good thing, even if it's the short term, but we're onto a good thing because it's about forward planning. When we were talking about the economy, though, and, you know, then that President Santos talking about that taxes would have to go up if we remained in a state of conflict, And I mean, this kind of scaremongering that he's doing, but of course, as you said, carrot and stick and et cetera, et cetera. You know, I don't like this. I don't like these sort of vast implications of these kind of generalized statements that he makes. But of course, he's a politician. Taxes are going to go up anyway because we need to pay for a post-conflict situation or post-accord situation. That's the reality. So either way, and when have we ever heard of taxes going down in Colombia? I mean, at the moment, the idea is that, you know, and Santos is out there doing the world tour and talking about foreign investment opportunities in Colombia. But, you know, we have to look at a little bit. And I was looking at a statistic the other day, and I mean, this is not your subject or my subject really, but corporate taxation here in Colombia is a whopping 76%. I mean, you would take your business elsewhere if you knew better. Because I mean, every single time, I'm a small business owner, consider myself middle class here in Colombia. Well, you're slightly maybe upper middle class because I'm, you know, got my status as a foreigner. But, you know, we get slammed at every turn for taxes. And I think as a foreigner as well, you know, I'm very careful with everything and I pay my taxes and I have an accountant doing everything for me. But, you know, it's a tough place to do business. So any even short-term increase in tourists is a good thing because it will allow me to pay my taxes. But if we move on from the idea of taxes, because no one's ever happy with taxes, none of us like paying them. But, you know, if I just finish this comment by saying, you know, this is one of the countries with the lowest intake of taxes, of people paying the correct taxes in the world, but or at least in the Americas, I think it's the country with the least amount of taxes paid. So, I mean, that needs to be chased up for anything to go forward. And of course, what has been strangling Colombia not only has been the reputation and the issues of conflict, like you said, you know, it's, people are looking at the country as a whole. I couldn't have said it better myself. People look at the country as a whole, but it has been the infrastructure in the country. But these last few years under President Santos, I've seen major works underway. I don't know how it is in the south of the country where you're based, Alex.
Well, I think you just touched on a very important issue. Like we said, the peace deal, the peace accord is going to be signed. It's not a stranglehold. There's huge other issues facing the country. Infrastructure is a major issue. If you look, if you compare Colombia to neighboring countries, in many of those countries, are taking over in terms of infrastructure. The road system in Colombia, in certain parts, is appalling. And so this is something that, obviously, when the peace deals, if they make a significant saving for the government, this needs to be reinvested. It's not just good enough just to have peace. The road system in the south of the country, they're making progress, but it's still poor. It's still logistically, you know, to get to the Pacific, there's no road apart from one road to Tumaco, which is one place that will remain pretty much off limits because it has a lot of problems right now. You know, there's still a long way to go with investment, with using the funds that are freed up by the post-conflict in a way that is, you know, strategic to develop tourism. I think the competitiveness, for example, if you look at even in Bogota, you go to the Puente Aéreo, which is a secondary terminal, which handles a lot of national flights to places where tourists want to go. And, you know, it's at capacity. It looks like a glorified bus station. It's not a pleasant place to be. You wait a long time for your plane to get a space to park and then to deplane. And, you know, these kind of issues, they need to look at seriously. The ministry is in charge. And if they want to take that next step, because you can't just say, okay, we're going to welcome in, you know, 1 or 2 million more tourists without upping the level. Right now, we're at a breaking point in a lot of places. So this is something that they need to be ready for.
I think that's absolutely true. And I will pay more for a flight that leaves the main El Dorado terminal, the international and some domestic flights. I will pay more so as not to go to the Puente Aéreo. It is, as you say, a glorified bus terminal. It's chaotic. Nobody knows where anything is. And you're just packed in there. You're packed in there like sardines. So I will gladly not go through that terminal. But as you say, but I think, you know, that's the thing, isn't it? There's been a lot of short-term planning. Let's just get it done sort of thing. That's that kind of feeling. But I say up here in the northern area part of Colombia, where I'm based in, you know, and I'm here in Mompox at the moment, which has been a region that has been you know, forgotten. I mean, really forgotten for years. And now we have direct buses from all over the place. I mean, people can go directly overnight from San Gil up to here, where previously they had to go San Gil, Bucaramanga, Bucaramanga El Banco, and El Banco Mompós. Now you can do a direct bus from San Gil to Bucaramanga. And you know, and that's positive. These things are positive. There are direct buses several times a day now to Barranquilla, Agua Chica, whereas, again, before everyone had to get up at silly o'clock, you know, to get up early and so on and so forth. The roads are getting better, so that the transport companies want to get in and they want to do these things. So, you know, it's a good thing. These things are going forward, and the Ruta del Sol has almost all been done, apart from the area of Santander. You know, so you know, we're talking two to three, let's say, lanes, in which was unheard of some years ago. So it's getting better. But talking about the tourism, talking about this and so on, I was spent the weekend in a part of the Sur de Bolívar, the south of the Bolívar state, and I can't understand why it is Bolívar state, because it's so far away from the departmental capital, and I think this happens in so many regions, in an area called Morales, which is across the river from a town called Gamarra, close to Agua Chica and Cesar. And the only way to get over there is between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. There's like a planchon or a little ferry service. And then once you're over there, you're pretty much a captive clientele. It's not touristic at all, but Morales is a main town close to legal and illegal mining in the area of the Serranía de San Lucas. There's gold up there. And it's now, you know, I was talking to locals and they were, I talked to a couple of the moto drivers who seem to be the ones most in the know, but, you know, they said, no, yeah, we don't have any problems with the guerrilla anymore. It's usually ELN around there anyway, but we don't have any problems with them. It's the armed gangs, it's the criminal gangs now. And of course, there's no state presence pretty much, aside from this tiny police station in this town, that can get across between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. in the morning. It's cut off from the world. So who are the authority there? And that's the problem, I think, with this, how big Colombia is and how spread establishment is. I mean, there is no presence, and that's a big problem, and especially in the south, I think, where you are as well, Alex. What would you say about that when we get up into the places like Silvia and on these other towns in Cauca?
Okay, absolutely. Firstly, Richard, I think what you touched on there is also a key important, is a very important factor in the war has been in recent times in compartments, being isolated from the vast majority of the Colombian population. I mean, we're not at the point where we were, where the FARC were on the edges of Bogotá and blowing things up in the capital. Yeah. So this also affects people's perceptions within the country of the war not being so serious or not being so bad, because they're not seeing it on a day-to-day basis. Whereas in these areas, they have been, you know, surviving this without stop. And the lack of government, the government has limited resources. And the signing of a peace accord with the FARC, hopefully, in theory, will allow them to dedicate those resources to the other problems. I mean, these problems won't be solved overnight, but it's a big step, because instead of combating an organized army, which was the FARC, they will now be able to use those trained troops, trained resources, intelligence services to tackle these other groups. But as you say, there are areas in the country that, you know, the government doesn't have a, in Cauca, there's a lot of those. One of the things in Cauca is we have a very strong indigenous communities that are very well organized. So in the mountains, they've sort of served as a bulkhead to stop the expansion of armed groups. They organize themselves. They have their indigenous guard, and they have been very effective in exercising dominion over their own lands. So they managed to stop, you know, where the state isn't a presence, they've become their own presence. But when you go into the lowlands where these indigenous groups aren't present, then it's a free-for-all, and it's an issue of there's no state presence, and it's the, you know, dog eat dog, and the group that comes out on top comes out on top. When there's only one group, they get a imperfect but survivable peace in the communities, because there's one group, you know, in charge. But when there's not, they have all kinds of problems, and this happens time and time again, which is why we say, you know, some of these regions will still be problematic. I think the key here is in some of these rural areas is where the FARC was, where their bases were, need to develop some government presence straight away. And I think an important part of this also is how do they stop the people who are demobilizing, the people who are in the ranks, the lower level FARC members, how do they stop them from joining another group? And this is key. In tourism, there's a lot of potential. These guys, basically, a lot of them are very literate. They've been in the guerrilla forces since they were very young. You know, some people joined at 12. You know, they were kidnapped and forced into the guerrilla army. So these people, what they know is the mountains, the jungle. They know the areas better than anybody. They know, you know, they're nature guides. They're all kinds of things that have the potential to be. And the government really needs to see the potential of these guys and incorporate them to promote tourism in that area. It's no point opening up for tourism and bringing guys down from Bogota. They need to be training these demobilized foot soldiers who know the area and who can, you know, who really have the opportunity and potential to be fascinating, you know, subjects for when business comes. So that's a key opportunity to incorporate people who are involved in the war into the tourism process. And I think that's going to be key to whether or not it's successful in these remote, far-flung places.
Well, I, for one, you know, if I was presented with the opportunity to employ an ex-FARC member, you know, on the, you know, and also I would hope for some sort of, let's say, you know, benefits for this from the government. But, you know, I have a small company, but they said, listen, if you can take this person in and train them up and then put them into work, I would do it. I mean, I think that we need to do this, be altruistic on our level, you know, in our businesses. And I think you're completely right. I think that tourism can take a lot of these people. Just like when we say Caño Cristales, all the guides there were former coca pickers, you know. They were out there working for the cartels or the FARC themselves, picking coca leaves for the production of cocaine. I mean, now they are the best guides possibly in the country. They know the routes, they know the nature, and they know about everything. If you want to talk about contemporary Colombia, they tell you about it. And I think that's one of the important things that needs to be addressed. We can't just ignore it. It can't just push it aside.
And I think Richard, it also takes an economic strain. I mean, right now, they're going to be having to pay these demobilized guerrillas a wage so they can survive. So, but they're going to be paying them a wage without them doing anything at the beginning. So it takes them straight off the government by actually getting them in gainful employment. But it's not just that. It's also giving them a sense of belonging within society. If you're just receiving a stipend to sit, you know, sit on your hands, that doesn't integrate you. If you have a meaningful employment that can be enjoyable, where you can meet other people and see other points of view, I think it's very important for the process. Whether that's going to happen, it remains to be seen. I mean, you know how things develop in Colombia. It needs a concerted effort from the government to involve these people. And like you said, tourism is where it's going to be.
That's excellent. I mean, so it's such an interesting time, and I don't mean to say that in a sort of a sinister way, but it's such an interesting time to be in Colombia. As we say, we have to applaud the efforts being made towards peace. Yes, there are many issues to be dealt with, but we have to applaud this. So let's wind this interview down, Alex, and just say, if you were to name a few other places in Colombia that would be, you know, on your list of places to visit now that, let's say, the strongest parts of the conflict are being wound down with the FARC. Could you itemize and perhaps share them with the listeners?
Obviously, with the caveat that, you know, nowhere, everything changes very fast. Everything, you know, the FARC could disappear, another group could come. So you always have to check the situation on the ground before making your plans. So, you know, we could see the potential for a place to open up and something could happen. But I think, you know, taking that into account, the area is the Amazon basin. You know, most people, when they go to the Amazon, they just go to Leticia, which is, you know, has long been the tourist place to go. But the place is, you know, the Amazon is immense. It's massive. It's huge. And there's communities all over the place. So there's places like the Apaporis River with its amazing waterfalls, which have been, you know, in the center of the flatland, will now become a possible destination. The whole department of Barapes, which is accessible by flights to the capital, Mitú, is another amazing place, you know, where there's just dozens of different indigenous groups speaking their own language, with amazing nature, you know, beaches on rivers backed by lush jungle. These are, you know, very much places that the conflict has, in a perverse way, kept them pristine, because, you know, major mining and logging companies have been afraid to come in there. It hasn't been possible because of the guerrilla presence. So, you know, there's a massive opportunity in the Amazon for them to develop a nice, clean, green tourism product And there's so many destinations I couldn't even list in the Amazon basin, but I think definitely Department of Valdez, and then you know around some of these, even within the Amazonas Department, La Pedrera, these kind of towns, these indigenous settlements, they have great potential if the government can come along and work with the communities that want to work with tourism, and then support those that don't, you know, because again, with these indigenous communities, some of them are open to it and some aren't. It has to be done in a sustainable way, so the government needs to come along and find out which ones, rather than just letting the capital flow freely into these places. Another area is my own department of Cauca, which has absolutely some of the most spectacular scenery in Colombia. The mountains are absolutely, you know, top-notch. A lot of culture, a lot of rich indigenous culture. The territory from Silvia, you know, heading up into the mountains is beautiful. It's rich in indigenous culture, you know, fast-flowing rivers and lakes and fresh trout and mountain views and Paramo, which is a unique landscape to Colombia. But it's possible to open up a whole new route from Silvia to the archaeological ruins of Tierra Dentro, down to San Agustin, and then all around through the rural back roads of Cauca, which are really absolutely spectacular. That's another area I think that could open up. And hopefully, it's a little bit less short, but you know, parts of the Pacific. The Pacific coast in the Chocó is getting some tourists, but if you head further down to the litoral, to the edge of Cauca, where you have amazing Afro-Colombian communities that have a very, very rich culture, musical culture, where the marimba, the palma, the chonto is from, but they make a marimba from palm trees and make amazing music in the middle of the jungle. These places also, in a more medium term, could come onto the scene.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And all of those places I would have mentioned too, I think you're spot on. And of course, we respect and, you know, acknowledge all of these tidbits, this information you're giving us, because you're speaking from a serious level of authority as one of the Lonely Planet authors to the Columbia Guidebook. Who better to talk about tourism in Colombia than someone who writes this book. So let me just take this moment and say thank you to Alex Edgerton, our Anglo-Australian travel writer who's been on the line from Managua. It's been a great pleasure having you on Columbia Calling once again, because you were on over a year ago now. But in positive times for Colombia, I think. I think that's the last thing we'll say there. So again, to Managua, Alex, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks very much, Richard. Always a pleasure.
All right, you're most welcome. We'll be signing off that episode 146 with Alex Edgerton. Do go out and buy The Lonely Planet to Colombia. It's a great book. It will show you where you need to go. And of course, Colombia is in the press for the right reasons at the moment. So this is episode 146. I'm Richard McColl. This was Colombia Calling. And thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.